all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don Roon. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, August 8th. So many national days today. It is International Cat Day. It's National Pickleball Day. It's National Frozen Custard Day. And it is National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day. Do with any of those things what you will. I think you'd be better off either sneaking frozen custard onto your neighbor's porch or even a cat for that matter. But, you know, you zucchini lovers, do what you want to do. It's up to you. Coming up this hour, it looks like that big old six-pack in lacrosse is going to be old style again. It's been more than 20 years since the sad news that the old G. Heilemann Brewing Company had gone under and old style beer went away. The label was eventually bought by Pabst and brewed in Milwaukee. But now Pabst is bringing old style back home to the lacrosse facility. And I would guess the brewery's iconic six-pack of storage tanks, where a permit was recently taken out to redo them, is going to return to a look it sported for decades. And so we'll talk to brand manager Adam Power about that in about 10 minutes or so. We'll also meet up with Hans Breitenmoser at the bottom of the hour, along with Kirsten Slaughter. And we'll talk about Wisconsin women in conservation and what women who, what is it, something like a third of agricultural producers in Wisconsin are women, and what they can do to continue to be good stewards of the land. If you missed us in the last hour, you can catch us anytime as a podcast. Just go to the Civic Media website or to Apple, Spotify, all the usual places where you get your podcast, and take us along with you and listen on demand as you like. Don't forget, you've still got just over 2 weeks to help out blood banks around Wisconsin with the Civic Pints statewide blood donation challenge. Just go give blood. Give blood. Take a selfie. Put it on social media with the hashtag Civic Pints. Read more on our website. You could be in the running for winning Brewers tickets and so much more. There's been a lot of election news and news about, you know, potential crimes around the election to tell you about. And there's one more that we need to share on top of everything else that we had in our last hour. And this one through a story by Molly Beck of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who writes that the Capitol Police are investigating a convicted felon over possible stalking behavior toward the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. That alone would be enough. But this isn't just any convicted felon, possible stalker. This is Peter Bernegger. This is a guy who has been spreading conspiracies about the election, 2020 election, quite publicly. And Wisconsin Republicans gave him a forum. They basically turned a committee meeting over to him for a wild, baseless presentation about claims he was making about the election. They gave him this forum with virtually no proof. Some said some nice things about him, said, well, maybe not everything is true, but, you know, we need to hear the concerns that others are expressing out there. Actually, no, you don't. You can do that privately. You can save the public forum and the public record for the kinds of things that, you know, the public should be made aware of, not just for spreading conspiracies. Bernegger is from New London. He was served last month with a warning letter from Capitol Police notifying him that his behavior toward Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf and commission staff could be interpreted as stalking under state law. He has claimed without evidence that a sect of Milwaukee officials illegally printed ballots for Joe Biden back in 2020. And he has sent plenty of other notes, warning letters, cease and desist emails saying that he is being defamed by the Elections Commission. Apparently, based on Bernegger's claim about Megan Wolf, he writes, you told people that I said I was going to come into your office with guns and shoot up the place. You stated that I was going to cause violence at the WEC offices or against you. These are 100% false statements and delusional claims you made up. You're a pathological liar, Bernegger said to Wolf. Well, Wolf forwarded this to the Capitol Police saying, Sending for your awareness, as you may imagine, this makes me feel incredibly unsafe and uncomfortable. So going back through the records to February of 2020, when Berneger was given a forum for the Assembly Committee on Campaigns and Elections, a lot was written about the fraud in his past, including, and I want to get this quite right, he was at one point sentenced to 70 months in federal prison on bank fraud and mail fraud. The business dealt with, where did it go here? It's, you won't believe it until I tell it to you. It has something to do about turning catfish into some other type of material. Oh my God, I'm going to have to find this for you because it's too crazy to believe. So this is the guy they gave a forum to. The fraud conviction stemmed, here it is, from his role in getting people to invest in a pair of startup companies, including one that purported to make gelatin from catfish waste. The company never made any sales. When someone asked him why he didn't tell investors the truth, his response is, they can't handle the truth. And apparently the same could be said for the Republicans on the Assembly Elections Committee, who gave this guy a forum. Let's take a break here. When we come back, a gem from Freddie Peralta. This close to a perfect game last night against Colorado, plus our full weatherology forecast and big news out of lacrosse about Old Style. All that coming up next. When you're listening here, wherever you are in Wisconsin, you're up north. We're back after this. For Oktoberfest in lacrosse this year, something that was started by the G. Heilemann Brewing Company, and now Old Style Beer is coming back to lacrosse. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. First off, to tell you, to say the Brewers beat the Colorado Rockies 12-1 is a gross understatement, because Freddie Peralta, matching his career high of 13 strikeouts, was actually well on his way to a perfect game, except that he gave up a home run to the second batter of the game. But that was it. That's the only hit he gave up. The relievers gave up no hits in the eighth and ninth innings. And so the Brewers faced only one batter over the minimum. They faced just 28 Rockies in getting that 12-1 victory. That series continues this evening at American Family Field. Time now to turn to the weather, and we will get a full forecast on. I just don't know how Jennifer Wojcicki is going to, top this. This morning is just so gorgeous. Jennifer, I'm hoping something like this could possibly stick around.
Yeah, you know what? Overall, it's really not too bad. I mean, we'll be seeing kind of on and off the same sort of forecast here today throughout the rest of the week ahead, actually. Sunny skies across the board for today. Then a mix of clouds and sun develops this afternoon from Madison over to Milwaukee with a slight chance for showers and storms for those areas. Highs overall in the mid to low 80s. That's pretty average for this time of the year. Wednesday looks like at least a slight chance for some showers and storms developing in the afternoon hours for everyone, with highs once again in the mid to low 80s. Best chances for rain will be around Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids. Thursday, sunshine for all, highs again in the mid to low 80s for most, but then a cold front begins to push through for central and west central Wisconsin, so highs there will be right around about the upper 70s. Chance for showers and storms coming in for Thursday night along that cold front from Wausau down to Richland Center and for western Wisconsin. Then by Friday, another warm front comes in. Still slight chance for some showers and storms across the board. Temperature-wise, though, it looks like low to mid-80s primarily, a little warmer for southwestern Wisconsin. Then a sneak peek at the start of the weekend here, Saturday, sunny skies with highs lingering in the mid to low 80s, a few cooler spots in the upper 70s from Avery over to Wausau.
And we'll talk more with Hans Breitenmoser next and talk about the updated crop report. But it's been nice to see crops slowly but surely catching up after, I mean, we're still below normal, but it's turning out not to be a disastrous year because of these, spotty chances of precipitation here and there. So we'll take that, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too.
There's Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. Right now it's 58 degrees up here in Chippewa Falls, down to Madison 66, Hayward 50 degrees right now. All right, let's turn our attention to the big news that's come out of lacrosse, and we're going to talk to Adam Powers. He's the brand manager for Old Style, and talk a bit about all the changes in the beer industry and how it has led Old Style to finally come back home after about a quarter century away. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Pat?
I'm great, thank you. And I think a lot of people are feeling good around lacrosse after the news here. I see you wearing the familiar Old Style logo upon your cap. Old Style, you know, it had bigger days, but it tells you how essentially legendary or ubiquitous it was. You still see a lot of Old Style signs outside of beer, outside of bars. You see the signs everywhere. So for anybody that might be thinking otherwise, Old Style, the brand itself, or at least the legend, has never really gone away, has it?
No, not at all. It's definitely still prevalent everywhere throughout the Midwest. The brand's actually growing pretty well. Over the last few years, it's been growing. So it's been good to see. And now we're happy to come back to lacrosse and start brewing again back in the hometown and looking really forward to it.
It's going to be great. I'm going to give just a brief history lesson, at least as well as Wikipedia can give it to any of us here. It all started with what was originally called the City Brewery, which is what the facility in lacrosse now is called. But first it was called City Brewery back in 1858. Old Style dates back to 1900 from G. Heilemann. By the way, pop quiz, do this next time you're out for drinks with folks. The G stands for Gottlieb Heilemann. The six-pack that we're used to seeing, the big storage tanks, 1969, when those went up. The G. Heilemann Brewing Company expanded to a point by 1983. It was the fourth largest in the country behind Anheuser-Busch and Miller and Stroh's. But then a corporate raider bought the company in 1987. It's changed hands, you know, through bankruptcies and sales. You know, the brewery itself had to close in 1999. It later reopened as City Brewery. Meanwhile, Pabst, which has gone through its own ups and downs over the years, now has the Old Style label. But it and many things have been brewed in Milwaukee or perhaps other places for over the years. But now things are coming back to the City Brewery location in lacrosse. So with that history lesson behind us, Adam, let's kind of get, you know, the current Pabst view of it. What is it that Pabst has been doing for brewing beer that is now bringing it to brewing beer in lacrosse?
So, yeah, we've definitely, you know, over the years changed breweries, changed different places. You know, the history is kind of hard to follow, definitely. But you know, right now what we're doing is we're transitioning all of our beers, every beer we have from the Miller Coors Network to City Brewery across the country. So we're excited to, you know, this November actually bring back Old Style to lacrosse for the first time in 24 years, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a little celebration. It's going to be a little bar crawl. There's more info to come. This release was just basically announcing us coming back to lacrosse for the first time. And then there'll be more info to follow. Follow us on social media, on Old Style Beer, on Instagram and Facebook. But we're really excited. I love this brand, and it's ingrained in my soul, I think, now after working at Pabst for almost a decade now. And we're really excited to be back in a big way, and you'll see it over the next couple months.
And look, the beer industry is no different than many other corporations, that there have been mergers. You don't have a lot of small places. You have some larger players now. So you don't have a separate G. Heilemann Brewing. You don't have a separate Schlitz Brewery, Blatz, Old Milwaukee, Schmidt, the beer I knew out in St. Paul, Olympia. But every one of those labels I just mentioned is now owned and brewed by Pabst. So that's what you were talking about, is all the different places that you brew these labels. So even though they're not individual breweries, if you've got a favorite or you want to discover a new favorite, you definitely have an opportunity under the Pabst umbrella.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many beers. I mean, one of my favorite ones is actually Schlitz. And it's like, you know, you only find it so many different places, you know. But, you know, I would say Old Style, if you look at like what's happening with that brand, I mean, going back from, you know, Chicago Cubs sponsorship and just what's happening, what I've seen is it's moving through, you know, the Midwest pretty good, and people are really loving the brand again. And I don't know if you've ever heard of the Chicago Handshake, but that's a huge special out there. It's a shot of Malort and Old Style, and it's the kids are loving it. It's like a rite of passage in Chicago, and it keeps that brand, you know, alive, and it's been fun.
It's the funny thing is that, you know, sometimes you don't know where a brand is going to catch on. And people say, well, what is it about Old Style in Chicago? Well, just people there, they really took a liking to it. I think I've told the story once before. Many years ago, I was the traffic manager for a billboard company in Milwaukee. And I would have to bring in these national reps from the airport, drive them around, show them all their billboards. Well, everybody knows about Brandy Old Fashions in Wisconsin. Korbel Brandy is huge, especially in Southeast Wisconsin. Korbel Brandy's not made in, it's not a Wisconsin product, but they really took a liking to it. So the Korbel people, they cared a lot about their advertising in Wisconsin. So I mean, the same thing basically happened with Old Style.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that either people will come back to it, or like you said, discover it for the first time. There's no reason why they can't rediscover some of these older legacy brands like Old Style and Stroh's and Olympia, because my goodness, I was in a Woodman's yesterday. And when you look at the hundreds of labels of all these small little craft beers, which are fine, it's just to say you've got a big old sampler platter to choose from. So Old Style may as well be one of them to see what's my next favorite drink going to be.
Yeah, there's so many beers in our portfolio that, you know, like you said, like you can choose one probably throughout the week. You won't hit them all. I mean, we have like 90 some brands. There's only 30 or so active. So it's pretty awesome. You know, I think I've had the privilege to work on almost all the brands except for, I think, Rainier out in the Pacific Northwest. And we also do Jack Daniel's Country Cocktails as well. So but it's been great. It's a fun thing. And like you said, you know, Old Style, yeah, Chicago loves Old Style, you know, and I totally understand that. But this coming back to lacrosse is for Wisconsin, you know, so we're happy to be back. We're happy to, you know, do some fun things around it. Like I said, there'll be some more news out there about what's happening soon.
And the lacrosse facility, let's talk about that for a moment. Again, it was reborn as City Brewery, and it's known for lacrosse lager. But again, in a sign of the industry, from what I read here, over the years, or maybe even currently, it's made all kinds of brands, including Arizona Tea, Monster Energy Drink, Angry Orchard, Mike's Hard Lemonade, Sam Adams, Sapporo, what you get every time you go to a Japanese restaurant. Yeah. That, you know, in all of these instances, you have choices, not just alcoholic, but like you, even the cocktail blends are a relatively new thing. I mean, they're not new, but they certainly are becoming more prevalent. There's a Fresca blend that I know is really popular with folks in my neighborhood. You know, there's very little that's static about the beverage industry, including the lacrosse facility.
Yeah. I think everyone's trying to get in the game these days. Right. So either it's, you know, non-alc or alc or whatever it is. And we see that everywhere. I mean, even us, you know, we have an innovation team that's, you know, trying to do some great things, hopefully in the next couple of years. And it's pretty exciting. It's a fun space to be in, you know. I mean, beer's, I think, always kind of bulletproof when it comes to the economy, you know. I mean, people are either drinking when they're having a good time or drinking when they're sorrow. So it's been a pretty good ride here at PAPS, and we're excited again to be coming back to lacrosse and putting a big stamp on it.
Let's talk about jobs for just a minute. And look, we're not under any illusions here. We're in an era that is, you know, increasingly mechanized, automated, and all of that. And that's, you know, that's how all businesses go. So this news doesn't mean, like, you know, forgive me for plucking a number here, 1,000 jobs are coming back. It's the label that's coming back, but it's also a sign that the jobs that are at the facility are healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're definitely producing, you know, not only just Old Style, but, you know, PBR we produce there as well eventually. So a lot of our brands, actually, Stroh's will be produced there. Stag will be produced there. So there's a lot of brands that were coming back, you know, to the facilities, not just lacrosse, but also the other three that are in the country. The city has four facilities now. So we're excited to, like, you know, brew beer again, you know, kind of on our terms, I would say, opposed to, you know, contract brewing or virtual brewing, they call it. And our team and our operations team has worked so hard to make this happen over the next couple of years here. So by 2026, we'll be full transition to the city network. And we're super excited. And I could see these brands really taking off when we have a little more control.
Oh, very much so. And you said it's a transition and coming in phases, because it was as far back as 2019, I believe it is, that, you know, there were first, you know, some rumors about this, that Pabst was contracting with City Brewery to begin production, and it led to that speculation. the contract that I see here, Pabst contracted with City Brewing to run through the year 2040. And so there's, you know, as these transitions have happened, it, you know, it just seems like it's an increasingly better wave of good news for the company and for lacrosse.
Yeah, absolutely. That 2019 was just bringing back the Oktoberfest we did for Oktoberfest. And
gotcha.
And then now it's like full on, you know, after our contract was up, we're now fully transitioning.
That's fantastic. Well, a lot more to come about this. Adam Powers is the brand manager for Old Style Brand. And Adam, thank you so much. Love being able to share the good news with everybody.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. We'll take a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser and Kirsten Slaughter about Wisconsin women in agriculture next. You're up north. As we mentioned in today's history lesson, still haven't found what I'm looking for. U2's second number one hit topped the charts on this day in 1987. Could theoretically also be used to describe the precipitation situation across Wisconsin, that Wisconsin farmers still haven't found all of what they're looking for, but it's coming back. Moisture levels aren't quite as very short as they were earlier in the growing season. And in fact, it looks here, according to the latest USDA weekly crop report, that corn silking is about 5 days ahead of last year. The soybean crop is about equal, on par with last year. Let's see, oats are about 8 days ahead of last year. And 5% of the potato crop has already been harvested, but that's 12 days behind last year. Third cutting of alfalfa is well underway. So let's bring in our friend Hans Breitenmoser and Kirsten Slaughter as well from Wisconsin Farmers Union. Hans, you're up to no good when it comes to, you know, the drought-like conditions, but, you know, doing things that want to, you know, keep the land in good shape. And I guess even in looking at these numbers, it kind of tells you something about both the way farmers are maintaining the land and the, I don't know, is it the quality of seed or whatnot to make things a bit more drought resilient? So, you know, for what reason is it not as bad as maybe we feared it would be?
Oh, I think it has to do with the practices for sure. You know, farmers have had to change their practices over the years for, you know, environmental and economic reasons. And that continues today. And with having to deal with drought and in some places severe drought, we definitely have to change some of the practices we do. It's kind of interesting because a few years ago I stopped growing alfalfa because I kept dealing with so much winter kill because of the weird winters. And this year with the drought, not having alfalfa and having more hay and clover stands has sort of hurt us because they are not as drought resistant as alfalfa. So sometimes I'm trying to figure out what's the lesser of evils. We are no-tilling some alfalfa into some existing hay stands to try and perk them up. And we're also no-tilling some Sudan grass and oats and radishes to try and get another crop off of these fields this year, since our third crop was pretty much non-existent. So, yeah.
Wait. How are the radishes coming into play here?
So the radishes, their job is to help till the soil, basically. So by having those radishes in there, that opens up the soil, it adds organic matter. It'll add a little bit of forage to the mix, but mostly they're just thrown in there for, you know, for that tillage practice and for organic matter. And just because it's fun, because then people ask, why on earth are you planting radishes?
Well, right. I mean, it's like, do we go out there with a pail and some scissors, you know, and we're going to get a few radishes later on? Yeah.
This is the idea that I got because of your earlier guest, sometimes I, you know, take a little too much advantage of the old style and the Pabst Blue Ribbon, and I come up with goofy ideas. Like,
Yeah. It's not, no, I don't think that your farming practices are inspired by old style in any stretch, but, you know, radishes or peas, I know my in-laws, you know, they've got some peas on one of the fields, and you should have seen my grandsons just tear into, like, they'd never had peas before. Well, they never had fresh off the pod. You know, these are city kids by and large. They live up in the mountains, not in farm area. And what a treat, you know, when you get those for the first time. So this is all about taking care of the land from an agricultural standpoint, but from an overall standpoint, it's where we bring in Kirsten Slaughter as well from Wisconsin Farmers Union and Wisconsin Women in Conservation. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me this morning.
No, my pleasure. So tell us more about what Wisconsin Women in Conservation is, how this kind of folds into the way that Wisconsin's farm families and other rural residents try to take care of the land overall.
Yeah, thanks. So this is a grant project that's funded through NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service. It is a collection of five different organizations that are working together to bring conservation education and connection and practices to the land for Wisconsin women, farmers and landowners. We're in our third year of the grant right now, and we have at least 2 years. We're hoping for more. So the other organizations besides Wisconsin Farmers Union are Michael Fields Agricultural Institute, Marble Seed, Renewing the Countryside, and eResources. And it's just a really great way to connect women farmers and landowners. We do in-person events and some webinars as well to make sure we can try and get folks across the state. And I think really the powerful tool is being able to bring women together to share stories and to connect with other women in the area around conservation.
So when you talk about conservation practices and the resources that are available, the funding opportunities, I mean, you're really in keeping with what's been a bedrock principle of Wisconsin agriculture for over 150 years. And that is that, you know, we think of farmers as like these stoic individualists, but although they're resilient, they are very much into networking and learning best practices from one another.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, in some ways, that's been the principle of Wisconsin Farmers Union as well, right? Is if we can bring together people, we can have a louder voice. And I think that connection is so important in rural America. I think rural communities is all about community. And in that's becoming, I think, harder. And so as much as we can to bring people together, to have those conversations, do the education, have a meal on a farm, I think that's really important.
And, you know, when we think of farmers and we think of landowners, for all sorts of patriarchal reasons, we think of men. But in fact, as you've noted on your website, the 2017 census records 38,500 female producers in Wisconsin, 35% of all the producers in the state. And so when you think of them as the producers and as them as the landowners, why wouldn't you have groups that make it easier for their voices to be heard?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that that number will actually probably increase at our next ag census. Yeah, the number of women farmers and landowners is increasing. And we kind of think about this like a plus, right? The NRCS has been doing education and outreach for a really long time. And women have had not had access to the same programs in the same way. And oftentimes it's just because they, you know, aren't part of that community in the first place, or don't, you know, didn't grow up on a farm for some of our new farmers that are coming in. And so the ability to really do some additional programming that brings women together, I think is really crucial, both the social aspect and the educational aspect. We really try to do it as a kind of a more flat learning style. So it's really learning from other women and with other women instead of a top-down approach.
And Hans, this isn't any great surprise, because women, you know, have been, you know, in integral to farm life, you know, from the very beginning, and frankly, just haven't received, you know, their due for all they do when it comes to field work and milking, but also planning and how they allocate their own resources, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think that it is interesting how this has evolved. my wife has her own business. She's not involved in the farm, but my mother on our farm here was absolutely very much involved. In fact, she had her own part of the farm, which was 100 sow feeder pig operation for many years, above and beyond doing all the other things. So and I know back in the day, you know, talking with the old timers, a generation or two ahead of me, it was always the wives who took care of the checkbooks and everything too. So while the guy was the front facing, you know, part of the operation, it certainly was the women who were doing a lot of the work and a lot of the planning and everything. So there this has been going on a while, but it's time that, you know, the dynamic in terms of the forward facing part of things have changed a little bit over the years.
Kirsten, can you tell us a bit more about what Wisconsin Women in Conservation do? We talked a bit about the funding. It is a grant that helps undergird these things that the group wants to do. What are some of the actual events that take place, both in person and you mentioned virtually as well?
Yeah. So we host spring workshops, summer field days, and fall workshops, and talk about a variety of different conservation practices. And we also have a summer camp series on that we do as a webinar where we talk about different topics. So this one coming up in 2 weeks will be on bats. Very excited for that one. I think the field days are one of my favorite parts of that. We will be at a landowner in Portage County this week on Thursday, and we'll have, you know, a great chance to connect with everybody, to do a land walk, to learn about the conservation practices and conservation easements that are on that property, and really kind of that have that chance to connect. So it's really all about building networks, about doing education, and then encouraging and helping women connect with different conservation programs that they could implement on their land.
And farming is about, you know, most people think of the big things, you know, harvesting, you know, 100 acres of this or milking a couple of hundred cows here. But there's all kinds of little things as well that every producer needs to keep in mind, everything from nutrient management to their feedlots to, you know, their runoff. But even as I look at some of these topics for the summer camps and the field days, creating habitats for animals that are nearby, even things like, you know, turtles and snakes and birds. If we've learned, among the many things we've learned over, say, the past generation, it's about the value of wetlands, for example, that they're no longer just these swamps that we have to get rid of, but they provide a crucial, you know, habitat. So there are all these little things that every producer needs to be mindful of, and you're giving them a way to learn more about.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a lot to learn and there's a lot to know about what to do on your land. And farmers and landowners really are kind of the base of that knowledge. I think that there is a lot of sharing that happens. Best practices, what's worked on your land, what's worked on mine. But there's also a lot of support and resources out there to make sure that you don't have to know all of it to start and to keep learning. And so I think that there's a lot of great resources, agency folks who are coming out to these events and really helping to build those connections.
What would you say, you know, getting off the farm for a second here, but for other folks listening to this, who maybe, you know, their land owning may not be 40 acres or 400 acres, but, you know, they may be on you know, a larger lot. They may be on a couple of acres. They may be along a river or a lake. Are there lessons that they can take away from this, you know, when it's things as basic as, you know, lawn fertilizer and things like that?
Yeah, 100%. And we are, you know, able to offer kind of modified conservation plans for folks who have, you know, really small acreage. So you don't have to have a large farm to come to our events. And we are seeing people who have, you know, 1 acre, 2 acres who are interested in what they can do on their property. You know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is around soil. So you always want to make sure that you have roots in the ground. There's a lot that folks can do if they're along kind of a stream bed and riparian zones and plantings, depending on if you're making that habitat for fish or for birds. And there's always pollinator plantings that folks can do. I think that that's one something that we've seen that's really popular, and that can be in a really small area or in a bigger area. And I think that you know, that brings in some beautiful flowers, that brings in our native pollinators. So there's definitely things that people can do if they're on smaller acreage.
So Hans, to wrap things up here, all of these many programs about taking care of the land, you get the sense that this is something that continues to grow in terms of its appreciation, or are there still a lot of battles to fight with other producers who say, you know, just leave me alone. I just want to do my thing and not worry about what it does to the nearby trout stream.
Well, I think you're always going to have a few producers who don't sort of get it, but I think most people are pretty open-minded and understand the value of doing some of the things that Kirsten was talking about. So I think we're definitely moving in the right direction in a big way. And I think having these more challenging weather events and so forth, that's keeping it top of mind for farmers too, because they're having to figure out how to make their acres more resilient to continue to be able to harvest the crops that they are trying to grow.
You bet. And to learn more about this, you can go to WIWIC.org. That's Wisconsin Women in Conservation, WIWIC.org. Kirsten Slaughter from Wisconsin Farmers Union and Hans Breitenmoser, as always, thank you so much. Kirsten, great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks you guys both for being here. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Pat.
Yep. All right. You bet. Again, WIWIC.org to learn more about that. When we come back, Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will talk about goings-on around the Wausau area, where he has his show starting in just a bit here across the Civic Media Radio Network on Bull Falls Radio or on the Civic Media app or webpage. We'll be back in just a bit. Hey, you're up north.
Got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
The official poker champion of Civic Media, Chad Holmes, joins us now from Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau. I noticed on a chat board someplace, somebody was asking if there was going to be a company football pool. Do you restrict yourself to poker, or are you one of these sports, fantasy sports guys too?
The only thing I do is with a bunch of people I've known since high school, we pick the games. I'm not into the fantasy.
No spreads.
I did it in the past. I was actually okay at it, but it's like, instead of just watching the game, you're worrying about your players, and it's just, I just rather sit back, enjoy the game, root for the teams that I want to see win, and not have to worry about, oh, this guy's on my team, this guy's on my team, I need him to do well. I just it's too much. I want to sit back on a Sunday or Saturday with college and just relax and enjoy and not have to be stressed out over a bunch of different guys on different teams.
Well, you have to think about so much already just to do the high school games that I can't imagine you want to put in any extra brain power on the professional stuff.
And the thing is, and all of a sudden, oh, I forgot to deal with that. Ah, I'm going to fall behind on that. No, exactly right. I prefer focusing my energy on the high school stuff. Just the way, you know, it's not just because it's my work. I really enjoy focusing on the high school stuff as well.
So we mentioned last week that practices are getting underway. You know, we make a bigger and bigger deal as the years go by. It used to be that, you know, spring training baseball was just kind of it's there. And training camp for football, it's there. But, you know, now everybody's got to be at every workout for that. And there's special coverage of, you know, college sports preseason. Is it at that point with high schools yet where, you know, TV crews are showing up to cover, you know, the workouts and things like that? Or is there still a touch of innocence where these teams can just get ready on their own?
Oh, Pat, you're so naive to think that TV people even care about high school sports these days. Come on. I mean, to be serious, I know here in Wausau, again, this is, I think, a media thing that is one of the things that's bothersome. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do, I think, a little bit more is focus on our local stories, whether it's news, or whether it's events, or whether it's sports. But back in the day, I mean, when I was first, you know, starting my broadcast career, through much of the, well, I'd say the first decade of my broadcast career, you know, we had our local newspaper, and there'd be a feature on a student athlete every day of the week, or a feature on the upcoming big game. Nowadays, I mean, and again, no offense to the folks on the TV side, but basically you don't see a lot of it. They spend most of their time traveling over to Green Bay to stand in an empty Lambeau Field and look like they're covering the Packers.
I hear exactly what you're saying, and I know that there is a bit of a
I mean, I'm over there. I love going to
There's a bit of a divide in the road, though, about that, and I think it would vary depending on the TV market and the TV station, because the station, you know, that I worked for when I worked for Channel 13 in Eau Claire at the time, I can't comment on things nowadays, but what you hear from the consultants there is you want to go all in on high school sports, because if there's one thing the audience loves, it's to hear local names. And they might hear the name of their grandson playing basketball or their granddaughter playing hockey. And so some places do go all in, but yeah, definitely other places that are having a tough time finding bodies as it is can barely find people to go cover one or two games, much less all of the slated games going in and around an area. So there's definitely a difference in how media cover high school sports.
Yeah, and the thing about it is they do have the Friday night special program and mm-hmm. and have, you know, the couple of highlights, but at the same time, I mean, I think the feature aspect is something we've lost. Being out of practice to have a sound bite with a player or something like that. And one of the things that, you know, one of the favorite things I do, and we're starting it up next Wednesday, is every Wednesday night I do a high school sports show, and I bring in a player. We sit down for 15 minutes and talk. You know, we bring in a coach, we talk for 15 minutes, and that's one of the, I think, advantages that we have in this format, a radio format, than they would have. Because even if they did go over there, you know, what you get is a 5-second soundbite. Here we get a chance to kind of delve into the sport, their team, their teammates, their coaches, their favorite classes, what they like to do when they're away from it. So again, that's something to, and I get great feedback. I mean, you're exactly right. Boy, I mean, you know, the people that are connected with those student athletes, boy, whether they're grandparents, whether they're cousins, whether they're, you know, family, you know, across the country, they love the fact that then it's on our podcast page and we're able to delve a little bit deeper into it. So again, that's something that's, you know, basically the stuff that I love to focus on. And I think there's definitely a lane for that to that people appreciate.
So you were at the Marathon County Fairgrounds late last week at the Wisconsin Valley Fair, and you spent a few afternoons at something y'all set up called the Truth Booth. Tell us about the Truth Booth and what you heard.
It was interesting because basically we worked with a nonprofit that's, you know, involved around the country, in fact, trying to get information from folks and trying to find out what makes them tick, what they like about a certain area, what they would like to see improved. And that's what basically we did. We talk about, hey, what do you like about living here in Central Wisconsin or visiting Central Wisconsin? And what's the one thing, if you have the magic wand, to be able to change and to be able to make a little bit better here in Central Wisconsin? And it was very interesting because we had people that were, you know, teenagers all the way up to older folks, and hearing what they liked and what they didn't like, especially in terms of the one thing that would they want to change. And we had a couple of young people. I mean, one day there, I think we had three, and they're talking about pollution. And it's like, you know, it's really cool that, you know, that they want to just make, you know, a factor like that. Hey, we just want to make sure that everything is, you know, clean here in our community. And then you hear about, you know, housing, and we hear about what we like in terms of having the four seasons and having activities, whether in the summer or the winter. So it was just, it was interesting. It also opens your eyes to what people really care about, as opposed to maybe what we hear about in a you know, a talk radio format at times. I think some of you call it the debate aspects of programming, that a lot of it is a lot of noise to people in terms of their everyday lives.
And then finally, just time for a quick answer on this. If you could translate public relations ease, there was a press release from Wisconsin Sports about the enhanced customer journey and experience at places like at the Kohl Center. What do we mean by enhanced customer journey and experience?
It means boozing up the people that come to the games. That's what it means.
Oh, it means they're serving alcohol.
And it means getting more revenue. And again, I mean, we could even just open up this whole Big Ten and college football and conference realignment. Man, it's just, it's blowing up so much tradition, and it just, it makes me shake my head and makes me sad.
Yeah. I guess I'll think of that next time I pour an old-fashioned, that I'm enhancing my journey and experience. Chad Holmes, Bull Falls Radio, 8 to 10, live in the Wausau area or across the Civic Media app and website. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Pat.
Talk to you a little later. That'll do it for us on a Tuesday. Coming to you tomorrow and Thursday, live from our new studios in Madison at the top of State Street. Have a great Tuesday. See you from Madison tomorrow.